roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
From the fight capital of the world, inside our beautiful home here in Las Vegas, Mountain's Edge to be exact, if you guys want to stalk us. It's the MMA Junkie Radio Show. I'm your host, Gorgeous George, and with me as always is the devious and dastardly Goz. Yes, we're reporting for duty. I'm kind of doing a hybrid of the intro here. On a Thursday, as we get closer to Christmas, it's going to be a fun show today. We're going to talk to one of our longtime favorites, Cub Swanson. We caught him about a month ago, 6 weeks ago maybe, pre-fight. Now we get to talk to him post-fight. He beat Daniel Pineda recently, and we want to catch up with him about that because that was a great fight, man. Great win for him. And it was his comeback from that big injury he had. He suffered last year over at Quintet in grappling at the hands of Jake Shields. And so he came back from that a year later, and he competed in MMA. However, that does extend his MMA win streak to two wins, being that in late 2019, prior to grappling at Quintet, he had defeated Chrome Gracie. So Swanson still in the game, man. You know how it is nowadays. Some of these aging superstars, they could be fighting for their life. Heck, check out an interview with Nolan King and Anthony Pettis. Pettis comes clean and says, hey, I could be fighting for my job. And for a lot of fighters, when they leave the UFC, it could also be the end of their career, or they know at least that it's getting close for some of them. Anyway, we'll talk about all that. We'll talk about all the latest news. It's going to be a fun ride here on the MMA Junkie Radio show, excuse me, Thursday, December 17th.
Hola amigos, Danny Segura dropping in. Just wanted to let you know about MMA Junkie's latest podcast. It's Hablemos MMA, a weekly Spanish language show dedicated to all things professional fighting. Each Monday, we recap the major events from the weekend, plus we analyze the week's biggest news. We also bring you exclusive interviews with the best fighters, coaches, and experts in the Hispanic and Latin American scene. You can find Hablemos MMA every Monday morning on your favorite podcasting platform. Suscríbete y nos hablamos pronto. Chao.
I want to start off by saying something because I wanted to say it at some point during the show, but today's a special day in many ways. It's a very sad day, but it's also a happy day. First, we'll start off with the sad and then with the happy. On this day, actually, 11 years ago, we lost our grandmother. So that's my mom's mom. Of the four grandparents, this is the one we got to know the longest. So this was the last one of our grandparents that we lost. We actually didn't even get to know our grandparents on my dad's side. Goz barely got to know our grandfather. As you all know, Goz and I have a 9-year difference. So I got to know him a little bit better, and he did get to know him. It's not like he didn't, but our grandmother, man, she was just the matriarch of the family. And also today would be our good friend Steve Straub's 52nd birthday, great friend of our family. And he passed away over a year ago, and today would have been his birthday. Today is his birthday. He's up there celebrating. And then also, I want to acknowledge my mom's sister, Sonia. It's a difficult day for her because obviously this is the day that she lost her grandma. But happy 70th birthday to our aunt, Sonia. All right, let's get going, Goz. Now things are starting to straighten out a little bit with Bellator and Yoel Romero and Anthony Johnson. We kind of have reasons for why they left. At first, Dana White, when asked about Anthony Johnson, he was just like, you're going to have to ask him, you know. And then as far as Yoel Romero, you know, same thing. We weren't kind of getting everything. We were thinking it might be the money, and we were wrong about that. it was the matchups according to Yoel Romero. But yeah, the UFC had mentioned he was 44, he's really 43, and that he just wasn't going to be competing for a title, which in that part they were right, because in offering the matchups, they weren't offering the top tier. Yoel Romero still thinks he's top tier. I mean, in the way he is, he's only lost the top tier, but he's also lost four in a row. So let's start off one by one goes. In fact, we'll just go with Yoel Romero since I just finished talking about him. What did you think when you heard about Yoel and his reasons? And did he come off a little bit stubborn, perhaps? And maybe he should have given in. They were offering him Brunson and Hall. And what do you think?
I think he should have given in because, and I wouldn't even really call it giving in. Everybody's in a difficult situation right now, and he just has to realize that. The thing about Yoel Romero is this, is even though he's older and he's on a little bit of a streak, it doesn't mean that he can't compete with the champion. If you put him in a fight with the champion's going to train his ass off because that's a tough competitor. I think he looks at it like that. Like, I'm a badass. I could fight anyone at any moment in any position in the rankings, and I would be okay. The problem is, the UFC doesn't really look at things that way. And they look at every time you enter the cage, what is the value that you bring? What are you bringing to the company? So it's kind of difficult, you know, because fighters feel like they're a tool sometimes that the UFC just uses. But it's really not that much different than what happens in the real world. You know, just people aren't going through fights and stuff like that. But I think, I don't want to say the word is stubborn, but I think he should have maybe given in, because I think there's just more room for him in the UFC to do some pretty crazy things at Bellator. I mean, I think he's going to get some good money. I just don't know that that's what he wants. Like, I don't know. You?
Yeah. So the last fight he had was against the current world champion, Israel Adesanya. So in that regard, yeah, I mean, a lot of people thought he won that fight. A lot of people thought the fight sucked. Other people thought it was tactical. There was a lot of differing opinions, and many people thought, including the judges, that Israel won. So the fact that he's saying, I think I can compete, yes, you are correct, Yoel. However, you have had plenty of opportunities, and it's just not working. So, you know, I mean, what can you do? I mean, think about it, man. He lost to Costa and still got to fight for the title. So he has gotten a couple of different opportunities there that other fighters would not get. And for them to ask him about Hall and Brunson, man, that's not completely offensive. Both guys are probably top 10 in the UFC. I know they're top 15 in the USA Today MMA Junkie rankings. So that wasn't too bad. I mean, it's what JDS was asked to do. Hey, you got to fight Ciryl Gane. Jacare, hey, you got to fight Kevin Holland. You know what I mean? RDA, hey, you got to fight Islam Makhachev. It wound up being Paul Felder because Makhachev got COVID. But still, a lot of the aging veterans just kind of have to give that lift up, the same one that they got at one point in their career. So he says, no, I don't like these matchups. And they go, all right, 205. I guess they asked him some stuff at 205. He didn't like those. Next thing you know, he's gone. You know, he's gone. He's going to Bellator. Now, luckily, Bellator has started to do some nice things with their division. But let's not kid ourselves. They got Bader, who's the champ at heavyweight, Nemkov and Davis, Corey Anderson, Liam McGarry, Anthony Johnson, Yoel Romero. Okay, so that's about eight of them. You could do a Grand Prix or whatever. But what I mean is, if Bader's still fighting as a heavyweight and you can't include him in the Grand Prix, or he just doesn't want to cut again, now we're back down to seven. If one of those guys gets an injury, we might be down to six. I mean, when Michael Chandler re-signed with Bellator a few years ago, they told him, look, we got you Josh Thompson. Check it out. We got you Benson Henderson, you know, and we still got Patricki and Derek Anderson and a few of the other guys to fill things out. But next thing you know, Josh really retired a lot sooner than I think people expected him to. And then Benson, he fought him. But then now what? You know, you beat somebody, but then what? And same thing with Patricki. You start to recycle the same names. You don't have that depth that they do in the UFC. But basically, it became one of his only options. The other ones, I guess, were PFL and one championship. Maybe Ryzen if they're still cutting big checks. But every time I look at Ryzen, all I see is the Japanese names mostly. So I don't know in what direction they're going to. So I don't know, man. I think he might have misplayed his hand. I think if you beat a Brunson or Uriah Hall, then you're in line to get a Costa, Whitaker, or maybe not Whitaker because they fought twice. 50 minutes is enough. But maybe a Costa or one of them other top guys, Till, and then boom, yeah, maybe you do get that next, you know, maybe you just are in the right position to get another title shot. So I don't know, man. I think it doesn't sound like – I think the managers just did what the client asked, but I think Romero might have been the one that fumbled this one.
A little bit, yeah. Really? He could still have success at Bellator. Picture him going in there and just the way he fights being devastating. But I just don't know that it's going to carry from card to card the way it would in the UFC.
Yeah, now look, if he were to go to Bellator and win a belt there, I mean, when you can boast that you won the Strikeforce Light Heavyweight Championship and then you were a title contender in the UFC, a couple split decisions there, if I'm not mistaken, and then win Bellator's Light Heavyweight. I mean, that's a wonderful career on top of two world championships in wrestling and an Olympic silver medalist. I mean, that's, you know, you still retire thinking, hey, I did something here. But yeah, the elusive UFC one, that one's got to hurt. And there's some killers there at 205 over at Bellator. So that one won't be easy for whoever takes it down. By the way, there's no official Grand Prix. I just said it. But it's done. You know, let's move on to Anthony Johnson. Anthony Johnson kind of clarified a little bit of what he had going on, and it boiled down to the marijuana business that he's involved in. You know, the UFC's with ESPN. He felt like maybe those weren't cozy confines for something else that he wanted to promote, and that's the marijuana business.
Mm-hmm. We alluded to that a little bit on a previous episode, but really, I mean, I don't see – it's not like the UFC gives you that many opportunities to promote it on a broadcast or anything like that. It's not coming out on your shorts. It's not going to be on your banner. So I don't really see how he couldn't have done it, you know, on his own time. I mean, look at the Diaz brothers, and I mean, there's a lot of fighters that talk about it. I really don't see how they couldn't have figured that one out.
Yeah, that one confused me too, unless what he was looking for was some sort of a sponsorship on the mat, a la Conor McGregor's whiskey, you know, if he was trying to like push that, or, hey, I want to be able to wear something maybe underneath the Reebok, you know, I don't know. Can I wear it on fight week? I don't know, you know, because on fight week, you're supposed to wear your Reebok gear. And I believe there's certain times where it's the weigh-ins, the fight, certain parts of the press conference. But I believe open workouts or some of them other times when you're on embedded, you can be rocking the other gear. And I could have sworn I've seen that other gear rocked, but I really wouldn't know off the top of my head because I'm watching embedded, but I'm not paying that close of attention to that. So who knows? Maybe that's still some sort of a front for something else. People had speculated USADA. I don't know what it is, but he didn't seem too upset about it. However, he does clarify that he wants to compete at 205. He's 230. And he goes, I can't be giving up 20, 30, 40 pounds against them other cats. I want an even playing field. And I'm thinking, you're just as big as Ryan Bader, the champ. You know, like, now's the time. It's not like their champ is a 260-pound monster. Now, he said he wouldn't back away from a David versus Goliath. But right now he's focused on 205. And I'm just thinking, man, what an opportunity to fight somebody you've beaten, by the way, and fight for a strap there and then make your way down to 205 afterwards.
I commend him on wanting to do that. The only thing I don't understand is where was that reasoning before in the past? You know, like, I don't know. I mean, if he'd ever wanted to give up all that size or anything, I think he probably should have never done it at any point in his career. And he could have been really successful as a light heavyweight. But, I mean, dude, just every time I think about it, like, how did that dude make welterweight, man? we were there, right, for one of them? Yeah, do you remember?
Yeah. They were carrying him across the street in L.A. from the weigh-ins to the back to the hotel, I believe. Oh. He did not look good. And then we also saw him in Anaheim when he missed at 176. But to his credit, he took that one late, and I think he told him he was going to fight. But guess what? He lost to Rich Clemente in that fight. Rich Clemente was a long-time fifth fiver who fought at 170 for that one, and AJ has fought as high as a heavyweight. So one could say, hey, that was a heavyweight against the lightweight in a way. But yeah, man, that dude, that's a big dude, you know. And he fought Andrei Arlovsky at WSOF, and I remember a subsequent interview he did with us where he said, "Man, them heavyweights hit hard." Mm-hmm. So he won, but he was like, "Man, them heavyweights hit hard," almost making it sound like I dipped my toe. It was cute, but don't count on me again.
One day, maybe the listeners can chime in a little bit here, but we're gonna have to try and figure out which fighter has had the biggest gap. In other words, like what we just said, where Rich Clemente has fought as low as 155, and he fought AJ at 170, but AJ's fought as high as heavyweight. But you got to take out the Acabonos of the world, that type of shit, right? But
yeah,
I bet you we can come up with a couple good ones. Like, think about guys like Faber that have, or even Jens Pulver that's gone all the way down the flyweight, right? For a couple.
Well, he's gone down weight.
He's never went down to flyweight for one?
I don't think he's gone to flyweight, but that's a good one. I was thinking BJ dabbled with 145, and I know he fought at 205. So, mm-hmm. All right. Folks, we got our guest today. Cub Swanson's going to join us. It's going to be a good one.
The Counter. An NFL podcast from USA Today Sports. Featuring For the Win's Stephen Ruiz and Chris Corman.
I know people are like just assuming that this is an upgrade at the quarterback position, but I don't think we could say that for a fact. I'd say it's a downgrade.
He never really had game-to-game impact, just coming off the edge and destroying people that we thought when we saw his athleticism in college and at the combine.
The Counter, diving deeper into the NFL with advanced stats, film study, and expert guests. This is The Counter. Listen and subscribe to The Counter on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Yo, it's going to be Cub Swanson who defeated Daniel Pineda at a recent UFC. We get to chat with him for the next 10 seconds. What's going on, Cub Swanson?
I'm just living life, you know.
All right. Well, Goz has a series of questions. He's going to go first, and then I'm going to step in, and I'm going to finish up some. We got this new way of doing things here on StreamYard, the broadcast software that we have. So go ahead, Goz. Take it away.
Now, Cub, I mean, listen, man. Great fight with Daniel Pineda. There were a lot of question marks, and I want to know if these question marks were kind of the same for you as they were with us. With the media, all we want to know is, has Cub recovered from that knee? Is he going to look the same as he did before? Those are questions that we have to ask ourselves, that the fans ask themselves. But are they questions that you ask yourself, or are all those answers already, is all those questions answered before you even get in?
Yeah, I think those questions were already answered. I had to ask myself that every day for pretty much an entire year. I'd say more like 10 months. By the time that I asked for a fight, I was completely confident. I just knew by the time I fought, I knew I wasn't 100%, because I don't think you could really be 100%. I'd say I was 90-95%. And I think it's going to still take me another 6 months to really get my leg the same size that it was from before. But there was nothing I couldn't do. I could do sprints. I could jump. I could do everything. But just the fatigue in my leg over time, that last little bit's going to take a little while to get to 100.
Are you still on a high from what happened? How long does that go for? And at what point can you turn the page?
I always like to turn the page pretty quickly. I like to, you know, take it in, but, when I've ever coached fighters and they do well in a jiu-jitsu tournament, or they win some little medal, you know, after a day, it's like, okay, go find the back of the closet and throw that in there and don't look at it anymore. It's time to move on. You got bigger goals. So that's kind of the mindset I've always had. You know, that this win meant a lot to me. Just to kind of put a stamp on that whole year recovery. But it's just a step in the direction of being the best version of myself.
You know, when you think about it, I was thinking of different scenarios. And one is, I mean, seeing it all the time, fighters can go in and be out and get that victory quick. But I was thinking, in your case, was this almost the best case scenario, you getting more time in the cage, testing, being tested in certain areas? Or would you have wanted to just come in there, piece them up real quick and get the hell out? Like, what scenario works best for Cub Swanson?
Well, I think I have something like 4 hours of octagon time. So I don't feel like I need to have a whole bunch. I just know myself, and I know that I'm the kind of guy that gets in there and I just get more comfortable as time goes. No pun intended. It really doesn't matter. I just needed to go in there and you know, get comfortable in there and then let my hands go. I definitely didn't want to be getting kicked in the leg like that. He was a big dude, and he was kicking my leg hard. He was testing it, and I knew I couldn't, you know, take too many of those before I needed to do something.
Do you feel like going into the fight because of the layoff, can you still carry that momentum from the Cron Gracie fight, add it up with this fight, or with the time that expires, it does almost feel like you're on a one fight win streak? How does that work in your mind?
It kind of goes back and forth. You know, you feel like you lost a little bit of momentum because you had this huge hurdle in the way. But at the same time, when you step in there, the last thing I remember was winning, not losing. And that was a huge thing going into the Cron fight. I, you know, every time I could go, the last time I was in here, I felt this way. It was back to back to back to back losses. So that really wasn't a very comforting feeling. This time, you know, I think the fact that it was completely different with no crowd and that I hadn't fought in the Apex before, that just made it feel so like new and fresh and fresh start. That's mm-hmm. kind of what it felt like.
When it comes to family, I think a lot of people tuned into the Swansons. That was a lot of fun. And all I could think of was, you're so lucky to have somebody that's been involved in mixed martial arts that kind of understands the game and what people go through. Because I was thinking, if that scenario was a little different where you were with just Marianne or whoever, that's a made-up person, people, that maybe wants to do other things, that doesn't understand that mindset of the fighter. Like, when you talk to your friends and they talk about their spouses and all that, like, could you envision yourself in that kind of dynamic? Like, how important is what Kenda brings to the relationship and the way her mindset is being around the fight game for so long?
Well, it's just, it's different. And the thing is every relationship's different. So, I think for me and her, it's taken a little bit of time for us to really understand each other. And I think the best thing that she could do is just back off when I'm like really in the zone, and just really allow me time to think, because that's when I'm in my best, you know, when I have time to myself. But yeah, I think it's a huge advantage for you know, me to be with someone who knows the game so well. But I think it's always just understanding like how you work together. And I think for me and her, it's been, you know, with having three toddlers, it's been, you know, that's why we do the show, just to show people like we're just learning, you know, we're trying to figure it out. Yeah, I feel blessed that I have a partner in Kenda, and we've been able to figure it out and make it work. And I just feel like we're getting better as together as a team. So yeah, I definitely feel grateful for that.
Hey Cub, what feels better when a Monday practice is over or when all three kids are asleep?
Definitely when all three kids are asleep. So, you know, sometimes I got to go in there and be the dad. Hey, go to sleep. The twins, you know, they sleep in the same room. So they remind me of me and my brothers every night. Just clowning around for a couple hours and not going to bed. So yeah, that whole thing, trying to get them to bed is a tall task. You know, going into practice on a Monday is always the worst, but I actually do well on Mondays because I actually usually prepare on Sunday so that Monday I don't suck so bad. So I think I have that down a little bit better.
Going back to the fight, the kicks to the leg, how much in your mind was computing, oh, that hurt, just like any other kick that I've taken, you know, in my career, versus, oh, that's where the injury was, you know, like how was your mind working at one time in terms of computing the damage, but also probably giving you confidence that I'm 100%, I'm ready to go. It was just a kick.
Yeah. So, I mean, one good thing about surgeries is you usually don't get all your feeling back right away. So I still don't think I have some of the nerves, like in my calf. So that helped out a little bit. But the kicks were I was feeling it. Structurally, it was solid, so I wasn't too concerned with tearing it. It's just that all camp, I had to ice my knee after training. You know, it still would swell up a little bit. Like I said, I was beating, with 4 months after surgery, I was beating my scores from the Crohn fight. On the bike, just being able to push my threshold. So my legs were strong. It's just a matter of the recovery it would take. So every workout all the way up into the fight, I would have to just ice my knee, get it to calm down so I could train again. So getting kicked was, you know, just basically like doing 20 sessions in a row, just the workload. So, you know, my mobility in my leg isn't great right now, but I had it checked out yesterday. It's fine. It's just swollen. So yeah, that sucked.
I wanted to go over your strategy. I told you this in a text, and basically I was honest. I was texting Goes, and I thought I was texting Goes. I texted you, but once I had you, I just wanted to tell you what I felt that night. And that was, you were so precise. Like, it seemed like all 15 years plus experience as an MMA fighter, and the fact that you were dealing with a heavy hitter, heavy kicker, you know, you man, it was perfect. It was surgical, I called it, because you had to be precise, but you made it count. And then other things, Cub, that I noticed was a lot of times veterans who are in the game and they've been in the game for a while tend to sometimes lose that edge where they fire off like they did when they were younger and reckless. But you did it. And you did it at the right times because before he got going, you were throwing them hands and you were showing them that hand speed that you had. I mean, it was a thing of beauty. Have you had a chance to watch it a few times, maybe even watch it with the volume down and just appreciate yourself?
I was able to watch it a couple times that night. I made my wife watch it with me. But I was a little disappointed with how many times I kind of let him fire off on my leg before I started getting going. But once I started going, I was pretty happy. You know, the biggest thing was it was mental. I was trying to explain it. I've always had to kind of get myself in like a headspace, and hence the Killer Cub mind frame, and which is like a kind of a dark place for me, of anger and hostility. And that's what I would always bring to the cage. And I just wasn't enjoying having to get there anymore. But when you're trying to have success and your career is on the line, you tend to go to the place that brought you the most success. And the times that I didn't get in that mind frame before, I got my butt kicked. So, I've often struggled with that, of what kind of headspace I should be in. And for this fight, I was just thinking about when I go to the boxing gym and I've been sparring these, these really good boxers, what am I doing beforehand? And it's like, I'm not really doing anything. I get my hands wrapped. I'm not hyping myself up. I'm just very relaxed. I'll hit the bag a couple times. I don't do much. and I'm just allowing my mind to, you know, be planning of what I want to accomplish, and let that be the only thing on my mind. And so that was the mindset I wanted to have, it, you know, going into this fight, was that same mentality, super relaxed, you know, be pinpoint accurate and just be smart. And, you know, I had said I wanted to do that before for this fight, and I stuck with it. And I think it really worked out for me. I just felt so relaxed in there. And I knew that that was the key to beating Pineda, because he's a pretty big dude. I knew I just needed to wow him with my speed. And I knew the shots that you don't see coming are the ones that are going to knock you out. So I knew if I was relaxed and sharp, then I would win this fight.
You've been one of the fighters that I believe has been able to really use traditional boxing and transition into MMA. But a lot of people will say there's boxing and then there's boxing for MMA, which I do believe. But there are a lot of traditional boxing methods and techniques that you can use that still work, you know. Mm-hmm. And one thing I'll point to is your footwork, your head movement combined with the strike and your balance and your positioning. I think that's something that a traditional boxer can do. You've found a way to make that work in mixed martial arts. Can you talk a little bit about that boxing training and where you feel you're at in that progression?
Well, the crazy thing is that I think it's pretty hybrid. I'm switching stances. I'm doing a lot of things that, you know, make you think, subtle things too. It's crazy because when I'm sparring the pro boxers, I don't box them traditionally. If I did that, then I would put myself in the worst position. You know, I'm not going to go in there and do exactly what they do, because that's what they see every day. That's how they know how to respond. So I go in there and kind of act like an MMA fighter. I do a lot of weird things to make them feel like it's not a boxing match. And then I basically do the same thing in reverse when I fight an MMA fighter in octagon. I do more traditional boxing stuff, but then mix in my, you know, unique MMA style to kind of throw them off. And it's just basic. Smarts is you don't want to give the guy comfort. So you're going to do something that's a little unorthodox, a little strange, something that they really didn't prepare for. And it's just that basics that I've been doing for a long time. If I would have to say the biggest thing difference between MMA and boxing is the distance that we fight from. And once you understand that and learn how to work around it, that's the hardest thing to solve.
You know, the scream that you gave at the end of the fight, a lot of people hear a scream, but those are actually words that we can't hear. There's a message behind that scream. And I wanted to know, could you put that scream into words? What was actually kind of maybe going through your head at that exact moment? You can curse too. Feel free.
I mean, I guess I would say like a fuck yeah, you know, or a don't doubt me, you know. I've said that before. It's funny. It usually comes when I'm fighting somebody and I'm the underdog, and I got a lot riding on it, and I pull it off, and that's just me. You know, I got the knockout, and you don't get to fight all three rounds, so you just need to let it out. And obviously I was extremely emotional afterwards. I just didn't even care. I just had so much going on. I was just letting it all out.
I think your fight showed just how important being the pressure fighter and the aggressive fighter, without overreaching and without getting careless, how important it is, because you could just see, like, if you rewatch the fight with the volume down and you seem to pay more attention to the guys' faces and what their reads are. But again, going back to what I was saying, there were even some off balance strikes that you were throwing, but because of your hand speed, it was making him stutter in what he wanted to do. He was getting ready to do something and then you would make him backpedal. You know what I mean? It was so important. And I feel like, again, we have a lot of big names like yourself, and RDA and Jacare and Junior DeSantos. A lot of people have been fighting, you know, and they're getting older and older. And like I say, a lot of it can be reaction time, speed. But I think some of it can also be just the failure to be first, like DJ Penn used to say, you know. But you were doing it, man. So whatever mindset you got in for that, that's going to be so key, because that in your speed, you can nullify a lot of what your opponent wants to do to you. I thought it was tremendous. I can't say enough about that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It's this whole year off what gave me like a huge opportunity to really like think about my game and you know, what made me great at what I did, and kind of, you know, really dive back into that. I had said when I got injured that I wanted to start back over from the beginning, and just get back to where, you know, I was really good at certain things and what made me shine. And I really felt like we did that this camp. And I really believe that the little things that I did for so long were giving me an advantage. And at some point, I just kind of, you know, when you're trying to progress, you always lose certain things. When you're trying to add something to your game, you may lose something else. And you're always hoping that something else isn't something so important. And it turned out that I was missing some important aspects of my game. And I knew I was going to bring those back this fight. And I just feel like I'm firing off on all cylinders right now.
How quick would you even like to fight again?
I would like to fight again real quick, but I did break my hand in the first round. I have a cast that I can take on and off, but the swelling went down, but it's still pretty ugly.
Ooh.
When I dropped him in the first round and he was on all fours, I was trying to hit him, and my corner was like, he's hurt. And I was trying to finish him, and I hit the top of his head. And so I kind of like let him up, and that's when I started throwing those elbows at the end of the round. But so yeah, I got to let this heal. Hopefully everything goes well, 8 weeks, and then, you know, I'll get right back to work. I'll probably start training again next week. Just trying to get, you know, there's still work to be done. I got to get my legs strong still, and I got to keep working. At this age, I got to keep my body tuned, you know, in tune, and make sure I can keep doing this for a few more years.
Yeah, I'm surprised you're not keeping it in tune by riding your bike and doing the interview like last time.
Yeah, I'm barely riding the bike because my knee is a little bit swollen. So I did 20 minutes yesterday. I'll do 20 minutes today. But I'm just getting them worked on and making sure I got the mobility back.
Rose and I were privately messaging when you were on the bike, and we're like, is he breathing hard? Let's make up two more questions just to see if he waves the white towel before we do, you know. So I think we might have kept you an extra couple questions, but you showed no sign of tiring. I go, okay, we're not going to keep him on for 2 hours, you know. But it was a lot of people in the comments were like, this guy's the G, man. He's not even breathing hard.
Yeah, I don't know why the bike I've been pretty good on. It's been something I've been able to shine on. And a bunch of the fighters that I work with, I try to make them beat my scores. And that's something that guys a lot younger than me are trying to beat me on and can't. So it's something I'm proud about. So, yeah, the bike, I can do that pretty well.
Last question. Prior to the fight, we had joked around about super fights, maybe 140, maybe 135, maybe Uriah. Did that catch any traction on your end? We did a recap out of it, and it didn't seem to be like any blowback. Like, this guy's crazy or nothing like that. But how about from your end? Did you hear anything about something, you know, you testing those waters?
No, I actually haven't heard anything about it. I put it out there just because, you know, I know the fans want to see me in exciting fights. I mean, I know they're going to enjoy whatever fight I bring to the table. But you know, people want to see big, you know, two big names. So I'd love the opportunity to get somebody that they wouldn't have thought I'd fight in my career. So that's why I'd be open to doing the weight classes, the different weight classes. But you know, we'll see. I'm just open for whatever. Just trying to get back into shape and try to have another great performance.
I gotta ask you something before we go, just because we were talking a little bit about boxing and just different angles and all that. I want to see if you can connect some dots for me. Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier too. That's going to be very interesting, and I'm sure you can maybe play it out in your head the way both guys fight. They're so different now. How would you see that rematch going? Like, how would you break that one down?
Well, it's hard to bet against Conor. He hits hard. He's accurate. But I definitely think that it'll be a better fight than the first one. I'm sure Dustin's replayed it in his head a million times. And I think he learned a lot from the first fight, just about not, getting in your own head before a fight. He's gotten technically better. I think he's looked tougher, beaten, top guys. So I just feel like he's a whole different fighter. Obviously, Conor's, progressed quite a bit. He's had some big fights, but I definitely say Dustin improved more since then. So I think the later the fight goes, the longer the fight goes, the more that Dustin has a chance, a really good chance. But if it's a first round fight, then it definitely leans towards Conor. But I'm definitely going for Dustin. I think he's an awesome dude, a better human being, that's for sure. I'm just hoping it's a great fight. The fans deserve it.
Last thing from me, you brought up the Raiders. It didn't work out, but do you want to be one of them first athletes they call? I don't know what tradition they have, but here are the Golden Knights. They ring the siren, and in Seattle, we see what they do up there. You want to be one of them first MMA fighters that represents for a Raiders game to kind of pump up that crowd when they come back?
100%. That'd be a dream, I've been a Raiders fan since I was born. That would be an honor. It was cool to see some of the younger players tweeting during my fight, and getting some love out of it. It's cool to be able to like dabble in different realms and have be appreciated by other sports. So seeing them hit me up, I had a couple of the LAFC guys, soccer team, hitting me up during the fight, and then a couple of Raiders players. So yeah, it was pretty cool.
One day we'll be able to share with you maybe offline what's going on with obviously our show's at Mandalay Bay, but that's the closest hotel. It's kind of like the host hotel for the Raider Stadium. They all stay at the Delano, and man, when fans are back, the things that they have programmed for just that game day experience, you're going to blow your mind, dude.
Well, I'm going to have to come out, come to a game, and then hang out with you guys the next day.
Mm-hmm. Well, this guy snuck in a couple more. Can I sneak in another one?
Shoot.
Who is the greatest featherweight ever? Starting with WBC through UFC, you've been a part of all of it. And I would imagine it might be down to Aldo, McGregor, Holloway, and Volkanovski. Those are the four champions I can think of.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'll give you a quick rundown. Volkanovski, he's beaten Holloway twice. Holloway's beaten Aldo twice. Holloway has three title defenses. Volkanovski's only got one title defense. Aldo had nine if you included two with the WEC and seven in the UFC. And then McGregor won and can boast that he beat two of those three in Holloway and Aldo, but he never defended his title. So just a quick little rundown there.
I mean, I'd have to say Aldo just because of how long he was the champ. But Holloway, pretty much beat everybody without being the champ. So, I'd have to say it was a tie between Aldo and Holloway for me. Conor didn't stick around long enough. Volkanovski's just a little too new, but yeah, I think, Aldo's historic with the division. He stayed champ for a long time, and then Holloway's done so much in the division. Yeah, so I'd say it was for me personally a tie between them two.
There you go. All right. Cub, thanks so much, man, for your time. And I know you probably got dad duty for the next couple months until you have to take that next fight. I know how it works. When you're in camp, it's all about you, and now it's probably your role reversed. So,
yeah.
And holidays and all that stuff. And I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say I'm literally going to go do some cryo on my hand, and then I got to pick up a couple cars I got on for the kids on OfferUp. I was going to buy them, you know, those little tight cars that, you know, use your feet to move around.
Mm-hmm.
But then I just went on OfferUp trying to save money and found a couple for cheap. So I'm going to go drive around and pick those up for the kids. So that's what I'll be doing.
Thanks. There you go. All right. Well, again, happy holidays. Thanks for the time. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Appreciate you guys.
All right. See you, Cub. And there you have it, folks. Cub Swanson. Great fighter, even a better human being. That's all I can say about that cat.
I have a question, though. If it comes down to a tie between Holloway and Aldo, then he pretty much told us who we think the greatest is, right? Because they fought.
In a way, but I think there still has to be that. That's something I even struggle with. Because let's pretend we're them, right? Okay. And let's just say someone goes, it's Aldo. And then that's Aldo's biggest fan. He says it. It's my guy. And then Holloway's biggest fan goes, but my guy beat your guy twice. And then he gets a tap on the shoulder from Volkanovski's biggest fan who goes, but my guy beat your guy twice, you know? And then McGregor's guy comes in and goes, I beat two of these cats that are being discussed. So, yeah. Now, how do you start to break it down aside from, like, can Aldo make up the fact that he got beat twice by Holloway? Actually, he also got beat by Volkanovski, now that I remember. Wait a minute. And Connor. So, you know, but he can, but then his argument could be, oh yeah, but did any of you do it for like 10 years straight? And did any of you defend what you acquired 9 times, twice in the WEC and 7 in the UFC? So that would be the route Aldo would start to take. Wait till you get older and some of these young cats keep coming at you, you know? So yeah, title defenses, overall record, and head to head's tremendous. I'm big when it comes to head to head in that regard, but geez, man, it's just an opinion. It's not when Cub said it, we put down the gavel and said it's written in stone. You know what I mean? We're all gonna have different opinions.
Can we pull back the curtain just for a second and let people know what happened at the start of the interview?
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So we've had a problem with our garage door, and the only time a guy could come out to see it was like literally called maybe 10 minutes before the show started. So George, right. We had kind of talked this out. Like there's a good chance that he may need to leave the interview and then I got to take over. Right. Which is okay. But the problem was I didn't know what would happen at the start of the
interview. I know, it was like the worst possible time.
So it's not that bad. It's just what happens is all of my questions, since I go second, kind of stray away from like the obvious of what how the fight played out and all that. Because I know George is going to ask that. And so all I could think of as I'm asking my questions is they're a little awkward because we didn't really like introduce into it, you know, like get into it. And then all I could think of was when George comes back, he's not going to know what the hell happened. So he may very well come in and ask the same exact thing I just asked. So I was trying to ask him questions and I wasn't even really paying attention to what he was saying because I was trying to figure out how I could relay to you what has been already asked or when you're even going to come back or what the hell was going on. But I guess what I want to ask you is everything's good? The garage door?
Yeah, so we tried. I mean, yesterday they gave a block of 9 to 12, or we'd have to wait till the next day. And I said, geez, what are the chances? I mean, that's a 66% chance he'll come between 6 and 12 Pacific, and we're okay. And I even stressed that to him. I go, can you put it in the driver's notes to maybe get us towards the tail end? And they go, yeah, we'll do that. And I said, okay. Just to give you an example, Goz and I had to lug something in through the front door yesterday that would have been so much easier if they just dropped it in the garage door with the garage door open. In the garage with the garage door open. So we just needed to get this fixed. But what happened, Goz, was he called and said, "Hey, it's Bodie. I'm actually running early." He called around 8:30. "I'll be there in 10. And I thought, okay, obviously the notes didn't work, but maybe he can get here at 8:40, 20 minutes before we get on. I'll explain to him what's happening. And he just goes, "You big dummy. All you had to do was click, boom, I sign, and he's gone." Of course, that didn't happen. He had to replace something. So he was already here, but I told him, "Just let me know if you need anything. I'll be in the next room." And he actually knocked as I'm saying, "Cubs Swanson, UFC featherweight, coming up with a big win over Daniel Pineda. And guess what, Cub? We got this new software. Goz is going first." So that's why I went over there. I said, okay, where do I sign? Thank you, thank you. Boom, boom, turned it on or lifted the thing. Checked it out once. He was on his way out. Gave a quick looky, make sure he didn't steal anything. Boom, back in here.
And I had to keep it on Cub like this the whole time, because otherwise you would see the big gap where it would look weird that George just introduced them and then all of a sudden his chair is just
gone. What about the side-by-side? Huh? What about the side-by-side? Can you do the side-by-side in that instance?
But then I would have had to take you out of the stream, and I don't know if when you came back we'd have that problem where he can't hear you.
Yeah.
So I just kept it on him for like four questions, just nonstop. He's probably thinking, where did everybody go?
Yeah, you know, going back to last week, we were supposed to have Jamal Hill on, and if you'll recall, we had some problems. Two things. We've had internet problems, Cox Cable here in Las Vegas, and the other one is the software that we use. It's called StreamYard. It's like the equivalent of Zoom, I guess, is another one that's out there, and or Skype. And this is the one we used at Junkie, and this is the one where Goz and I have a private account as well. So it just works because we're all familiar with it. And for the most part, it hasn't had a problem. I think in their effort to clean things up, fix a couple bugs, you know, make some little tweaks, they'll do updates the same way you get an update like on your iPhone or, you know, one of those other smartphones. And when you do it, have you ever noticed that, oh, something's different. They switched it. It works this way. You know, we're creatures of habit. So we noticed some problems with audio. However, StreamYard, look, they've been cool. But they're similar to, I guess, Instagram or Twitter, where you just can't talk to anyone on the phone. All you can correspond, or even back in the day, Apple Podcasts, for crying out loud, man, is just email back and forth, and I'm like, we could have handled this on the phone instead of emailing back and forth over 2 days. We could have hammered this out in 20 minutes. But they just go back and forth, back and forth. So today was the first day we really felt comfortable with having a fighter guest. If you'll recall, we had Nolan King, one of our colleagues, on Monday helping us recap Bellator and UFC. But that was a little different because Nolan's feelings wouldn't get hurt if we had a problem and we said, "Nolan, we got to let you go, pal. This thing's a catastrophe." So now it's working. We're going to start booking a lot of guests, not just for our show here on Sportscaster, which, by the way, Sportscaster is perfect. It was Cox Cable and StreamYard that was giving us the problems, but we'll start doing more bookings here, start throwing more interviews at the editorial. But it went well. I really love talking to Cub.
Yeah, he's super cool.
And the garage door's fixed.
What was it? Was it a little thing on the wall or something else?
No, it was at the top.
Top, huh?
Yeah, he said something like a circuit breaker or something within the actual machine that reads the, you know, I guess the remote control of the mess. He did give, he did say, "Your wheels are the cheapest wheels out there. They come with every new home." He goes, "You may want to get more of the smoother wheels, because you know how ours opens up and goes." So he said. And I go, "Look, man," I go, "I'll pass that on, but just thank you."
If we were the Batcave,
get out of here. You what?
If we were the Batcave, everyone would know where Batman lived, right? When that door goes up, you know.
You know who he looked like? What was the guy that was the best friend for Jax on Sons of Anarchy? Opie, right?
Opie, yeah.
He almost looked just like him.
Really? And
was dressed like him, had kind of a big dude, about 6'2", had the beard, he had the beanie.
Oh, he's been here before. He's an MMA fan.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Wait, for a garage door?
No. I think he had to do a house check or something.
Oh, well, his name was Bodie, so maybe. Cool guy. He did his work. He was gone. He was cool. All right. So, listen, we kind of covered Yoel Romero and Anthony Johnson. Those were two of the biggest stories, actually, in the last few days, where not only was it the fact that they're no longer going to be in the UFC, but we didn't know why. And so we kind of covered that in the first part of the show, if you guys want to check it out, because I know a lot of people were wondering. And, of course, look, any stuff that's discussed here on this show, it's all on MMA Junkie. On the front page, we're the official radio show for MMA Junkie. And you can download our free app and check it out when you're perusing the news on your 15-minute breaks, your lunch. That app is fabulous, and it's uploaded all the time with all types of great stories. You can also stream our radio show on the app, so check it out, or just go on your desktop and laptop straight to MMAJunkie.com for the best coverage in mixed martial arts. This weekend, we also had a UFC 256 watch-along, and I wanted to thank everybody once again for that. It was a real, real good time hanging out. I thought we started getting a lot of comments in the chat, so it was kind of cool spending the time with you guys. That's why we call it a watch-along. We watch along with y'all. I was going back and checking it out, and it's funny how sometimes we stray away and start talking about other stuff. And then I started looking and thinking, oh, my God, just me wolfing down that pizza after a few beers. That can't be too pleasant to look at. But it's a fight party, right? If you were at the house or we were at your house, that's how we are. We're enjoying fights. We're shoving pizza in our mouths. We're drinking beers and having a good time. And I can't wait for the next one, which I imagine will be the Poirier and McGregor fight, right?
I imagine, yeah. I guess we got to confirm, but it's biggest fight of the year.
Yep, already. That's the power of the Irishman, man. He's tremendous. He's incomparable in that regard. No one will ever say who's the most famous mixed martial artist ever, who's the highest grossing mixed martial artist ever, who's the most popular mixed martial artist ever, who has the biggest social media following. You know, it was Ronda for a while. Do you remember that one hashtag press conference where Conor had to make sure he said male? Because I think he said, who the biggest star in the UFC is? Male. Because he knew Ronda was right in front of him, and she was at the height of her popularity. But, yeah, that's not the case any longer, man. It's that dude.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. I mean, he can do whatever, and people are going to tune in.
Yeah. And then I wonder, I mean, Brock's tremendous too, man. Brock Lesnar was tremendous. It took a while for them to beat that 1.6 million pay-per-view buy record that he had set with Frank Mir back at UFC 100. Mm-hmm. Let's not forget George St. Pierre was also on that card, so that didn't hurt, but it was historic. It was 100 pay-per-views with two title fights, St. Pierre defending against Thiago Alves, Brock Lesnar defending against Frank Mir. 1.6 million pay-per-views was the record for a long time, and he got broken in 2016, so about 7 years later by McGregor versus Diaz 2. The first McGregor Diaz was, I think, 1.5 million pay-per-view buys. The second, I believe, went to 1.65 million pay-per-views. And then, of course, all that got shattered by Khabib Nurmagomedov and Conor McGregor at 2.4 million pay-per-views. So when they break it, they put it out there. It becomes a harder record to break. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What'd you think of Tony Ferguson kind of going over his fight? And
I didn't see it. I just saw the headline where he's in disagreement that he was nominated, right?
Yeah, he actually thought he broke Charles Oliveira in round one mentally. I saw some of it. It was pretty interesting. It's so weird because, like, now, you know, you also look at, like, Rose Namajunas and how they were saying she doesn't want a title shot. Like, this.
Really?
Yeah.
I saw the title of that, and I was like, how can she possibly answer that in any other way?
Pat Barry came out really quick and said, look, I don't want to put stuff out there, but this is absolutely not true. We do want the title shot, which to me probably points to some kind of money dispute or something. But it's so funny how, like, that psyche of a fighter is something that there's what the truth is, and then there's what kind of gets put out there. And so those are two fighters I think that you can point at that, you know, with what happened in Brooklyn and how that's affected Rose. I think they try and transcend that a lot to her mixed martial arts career. And then with Tony Ferguson, you know, we all kind of thought that was a pretty dominant performance by Justin Gaethje and Charles Oliveira. But in his eyes, he just kind of sees things differently.
I'll have to rewatch it because Ferguson has earned that, I think, from any media or fan. Fighters are usually going to interpret things in their favor no matter whether it's contract negotiation or how a fight went or how they looked or whatever, fill in the blank. But, I mean, 99 out of 100 people I talked to just, I mean, were convinced that it was a whitewash, you know, from Oliveira on Ferguson. But in no way did anybody go, he's washed up or he's done. We just said, wow, he lost. He got dominated. And then I think the topic changed to kudos to Oliveira and how great he looked. You know, and then maybe you go back and say, hey, could it have been too soon after Gaethje? Did Gaethje put a number on Tony? You know, I don't know. I mean, those are all the little subplots. But just Oliveira versus Ferguson, I thought Oliveira had a great game plan with those takedowns and then mixing up the ground game and the striking. He won, all credit to him. Tony saying what he said, I don't know. I'd have to go back and rewatch. But my first impression, what I felt that night, was he got dominated.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I don't feel like if they fought 10 times, they would all look that way.
Exactly.
But I think in that particular, I mean, that's the thing, dude. Like, really, Tony's had two bad losses, but they're kind of the two bad asses at the same time. And he doesn't give you the feeling that if they fought 10 times, it would go like that every single time. So I think Tony just needs a little bit of time, needs to change a couple things strategy-wise, but I think he'll be back.
We're going to exit on out of here, folks. There's a big show this weekend here in Las Vegas, headlined by Jeff Neal and Stephen Thompson. And, of course, keep it locked on MMA Junkie for great coverage on that event. There's a few other events as well on the regional circuit. I advise you to check out the schedule tab on our front page at MMA Junkie, and it'll tell you everything that's going on, not only this week, but subsequently the end of the year and the early part of next year. It's already got the fight cards as they fill up with all the info in terms of what channel, what start times, and who's filling out those cards. So take advantage of those tabs at the top, including the rankings, the results, and links to the radio show as well. All right, folks, we'll still be back. So we'll continue saying happy holidays, but we'll see you once before Christmas, I believe. So in the meantime, we're going to exit here right now. And thanks again to Cub Swanson for his time. And thanks to you all for your support. Goes on Twitter and Instagram is at the Goes, THEGOZE. I'm at MMA Junkie George, and our radio show is at MMA Junkie Radio. Go out there and be a champion.